Blog Talk Radio.
We'd like to welcome everybody to Missing Pages of History, a show that is dedicated to serving the underserved communities, a show that seeks to use information as a tool to help develop our communities and our people. We often say to our people that without information, you cannot think. So, as always, Mr. Page of History, we will continue to travel down the road of filling in those missing pages of history. We first and foremost would like to apologize to our supporter and listening audience based upon our last show. There was no production because we had some issues with the weather, and because of the weather, technologically speaking, we had no means to conduct such a program. So we do apologize, but it was beyond our control to do so. At the same time, we'd like to give you a little brief update to remind all of our supporters and listening audience that Missing Pages of History will be conducting his first quarterly raffle fundraiser drawing March the 7th. It will take place at 1 p.m. on WCLM 1415 AM radio. So it's still not late to get your tickets. If you want your tickets, you can call 804-726-3217. Again, we'd like to support. We'd like to thank all those who have supported us, and we're looking for others to come in and join us. The more, the better. We want to do this as a collective community. Missing Pages of History to help. But tonight, I mean this evening, we're going to be discussing with you a general theme of from 1965 today, what has changed, gaps of inequality. That's right, we're talking about gaps of inequality. What we would like to do is read you some issues or some points from several articles that we had researched earlier, and we would like to get your response to these articles and this whole question of what has changed, if anything, from 1965 to today? Your perspective. There's one article I will read, and I would like to get your response to it. It reads as this, title, Black, White, Higher Education Gap Larger Today than 50 Years Ago. This article was written by Austin Nichols, August 21st, 2013. It stated that in 1962, the year before the March on Washington, about half of all white people, over 25, had completed high school, but only a quarter of blacks had. Since then, the gap has been nearly eased, shrinking down to 3% or 3 percentage points. But the gap in college completion rates has widened, and for most families, college is the ticket to a middle-class life, improving economic mobility for children and protecting families from financial distress. Only 4% of black ages 25 or older in 1962 had a college degree, while 10% of whites did. In 2012, 21% of blacks had a college degree and 31% of whites did, meaning the gap grew from six percentage points to 10 percentage points. Difference in school quality added up over time. It says the quality of public education also differed by race because our school financial system. Because of the black-white wealth gap, richer white families live in school districts with greater property tax revenue, supporting higher education spending. Differing in the early education opportunities add up over the school year and result in large achievement gaps. Taking families' income and neighborhoods' characteristics into account generally reduces the black-white achievement gap, suggesting that families' income differs drive much of the achievement gap. Politics attend at closing the education gaps are in jeopardy. Higher education has long been the vehicle for children from lower income families to move up. into the middle class. Children of less educated parents are more likely to be held back. They tend to have less education, lower life earnings and wealth, and worse health. In a recent recession, families with a college educated worker were more or less likely to suffer from jobs. Families with more education tend to be less likely to suffer large losses of income as well. So not only do families with more education have higher life incomes on an average, they also suffer less risk when it comes to their incomes. The persistent gap in higher education between blacks and whites, largely due to persistent wealth differences, leads to lower income, wealth and health in future years, and in the next generation, gap in college completion is actually larger today than it was 50 years ago. And many of the policies used by closing the gap are under fire, including admission policies and financial aid. We need review policies and intervening at the end of the high school. Many may be too late. We need to address racial disparities that begin at early ages and may be driven by large differences in quality of public education. Just based on that particular article, we have a caller that can call in at 818-337-0016. We are really talking about 1965 to today. What has changed? We're dealing with gap equality. The first article was the article where it talked about from the 60s to the present day, maybe why in terms of this gap, in terms of the differences in education has played a role in terms of this gap equality between blacks and whites. We'd like to have your views and comments. We'll stop right now. We have people on the line. Welcome to Mr. Paisley History. Caller 6029. What's your response to your thing tonight and the article we just read so far, caller? Caller 6029.
Yeah, well, I think the disparity in terms of educational achievements, I think, is one that's systemic in nature. I don't think it's a surprise that when we look between 1965 and currently, when we look at in terms of the rates, that the rates have actually gotten worse in terms of attainment of higher education for African people. So I'm not surprised at all. You allude to the fact that when you talk about just financing public school systems, when you look at the whole basis of the revenues, and particularly when you start talking about property tax being the primary determinant in terms of the quality of the instruction, the access to resources, access to books, and so forth and so on. But clearly, when you talk about the poor parts of society, poor communities, that clearly don't have the revenues that the more wealthy, more affluent communities have. And so, as a consequence, the kind of books, the kind of instruction, the kind of materials needed in terms of preparing kids for the 21st century. It's simply not there. So it's not surprising. But I think more importantly, I think what people have to understand is that when we talk in the context of global capitalism, we understand that because capitalist society is in decline, one of the things that you have to understand is that they're hard-pressed in terms of providing revenue for those things which people really need. And as such, because you don't have an economic base to create jobs, to create opportunities, you have a situation where intimately you have a situation where you have a large number of people in which you have no need for. Also, when we talk about the availability of jobs in society, well, basically when we talk about a service industry job, we're talking about McDonald's, Burger King, Hardee's, and so forth and so on. And so, therefore, the need for more technical, more educated society is something that actually would be a detriment to the system at large if you actually had lots of more people who really were truly employed. And so what we have to understand is that systemically there is a drive in terms of making sure or that these numbers, in terms of education attainment between the African people, continue to get worse and worse and worse. And that's quite impossible of the way the system works. And this is what we have to understand. And also, when we talk about those factors that contribute in terms of, how well kids perform in school, that's no question. Nutrition plays a big part of that. That's no question. The kind of communities that you come out play a big part in that. If you come from a community where you don't have access to food, where you're eating sugar cakes and potato chips in order to survive, And clearly, as a young child growing up in such a condition, in such a situation, and clearly his ability, her ability in terms of actually intellectually, becomes problematic because it's almost impossible to, on a sugar diet, to actually, number one, be able to focus, and secondly, to be able to process information that's come at you. So what happens is that you have a situation which is created by the system, which makes sure that people are struggling to survive. By struggling to survive, it creates the level of stress that people are subject to, which will short circuit their ability to learn. And so all these problems you talk about, brother, is part and parcel of a decline of a global capitalist society. And so those kind of problems are being expected. The issue is, what are we going to do given the reality in terms of, you know, this abysmal record that erased that you cited in terms of, you know, educational attainment? It seems to me that, first and foremost, people in the community have to, aside from understanding what the issues are, have to begin to organize, go together, create own schools to make sure the kids get the kind of resources they need in terms of being able to compete in the 21st century. If not, if we really think that the system at large has a vested interest in educating our children, then we're sadly mistaken. I think that, you know, as I alluded to before, that clearly the economics simply are not tolerable to increase expenditures when it comes to education, particularly for poor and African children. So this is the problem that we're confronted with in terms of the system at large. One of the things that Barack Obama does very, very well, he signs expenditures for military expenditures all the time, and there's no problem with that. $3 billion there, $8 billion there, it's not a problem. But the moment you talk about expenditures in terms of human capital, in terms of investment in human beings, then all of a sudden we have no money. But it's part and parcel of the way the capitalist system works, and this is what we have to understand. And so those numbers that you cited, brother, are only going to get worse and worse, and there's no question about that.
Okay, caller, we thank you for your input to our program today. What we're going to do is we're going to take some more phone calls. We will open that line up to our listening audience. Please dial in at 818-337-0016. As we go along through this program, we're going to be getting some more factual information as to deal with this inequality gaps, this question of whether or not how far have we came so far from 1965 to today. What I want to do right now is share another article with you, and as we continue to discuss this issue of gap inequality. This article stated whites get wealthier, while blacks and Hispanic lag farther behind. And written by a Tammy Lobe. It stated that the Great Recession hit all Americans hard, but only whites have seen their wealth rise during this recent recovery. And that's why the already vested wealth gap between whites and other racial and ethnic groups to near record levels, while household median wealth ticked up to $141,900 in 2013, up 2.4% from 3 years earlier, while to a Pew Research Center reported released Friday, net worth for black households dropped by a third during that time to $11,000. Hispanic families experienced a 14% decline in wealth to $13,700. Whites have 13 times the net worth of blacks, the largest wealth gap that exists since George H.W. Bush was president in 1989. The ratio of net wealth between whites and Hispanic now stands at more than 10 times the widest it has since 2001. Five disturbing stats on black-white inequality. Much of the focus in recent years has been the growth in income inequality, with the top 1% capturing most of the post-recession gains. But wealth inequality is also troubling. There are several reasons for the growing gaps, said Prue, citing Federal Reserve data. And these are some of the areas. Wealth gap widened. You have minorities' household median income fell 9% between 2010 and 2013, compared to a drop of only 1% for whites. So many minority households may have been able to stock away as much or may have had to use more of their savings to cover expenses. Also, the financial markets have rebounded much more than housing in recent years. Since whites are more likely to own stocks, they have seen a bigger wealth boost. Real estate, on the other hand, makes up a big chunk of blacks and Hispanic net worth, but home ownership declined faster among minorities than whites. Between 2010 and 2013, only 4.7% of minorities were homeowners in last year, but 73.9% whites own home. And it goes, it takes some digging to find there's racial and ethnic disparities which are masked when looking at the nation's overall median wealth. For all households, median wealth slipped slightly to $82,300 last year, down 1.1%. Again, those are some factors that deal with this question of gap inequalities. So we'd like to open up our line, get your views and perspective on this thing tonight. We'll go to line 8488. Welcome to Missing Pages of History. Your question or comment, please. Line 8488.
All right, peace. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. Peace. This is Brother Mikhail out of Philadelphia with June, and it's good to talk to you guys again. I'm going to give you my opinion on that in our entire situation with the education and the wealth gap. And there's several forces at play, and the force I'm going to look at is primarily ourselves. With our particular historical entrance into this country and the coming of freedom, or what we call freedom, there's been a gap from that very beginning. And so now we're at the point where we've maybe moved to a bigger city from the rural South, and that's for most of our people here. Along with that rural background comes a certain culture, and it's not really adapted to the life in the big city, and it's not really adapted to the fast pace of change that we're seeing when we turn on that news program on TV. We need a very huge input into our basic culture in terms of education. What I see and what I've experienced is that there's a negative backlash within the community to a certain degree, and that's been held over for a long time, that's not particularly interested in the larger society. Now, that's not to speak for all of us, but there's a portion of our population that's very disconnected from anything dealing with stocks, bonds, financial institutions, credit, and how to obtain credit in this society. So when I go amongst my people here in Philadelphia, two kinds of groups, those who are very much aware of how this system works. Matter of fact, the last week we did an interview for our website, philaroundtable.webs.com, with a brother from the Hebrew Israelite community, and he's left the post office and become a construction person, a builder. And he was informing me of how to obtain maybe $150,000, $250,000 to do those kinds of projects where you may be building a housing apartment or rehabbing houses or opening a business of various kinds. But the whole process was pretty involved, and the basics were credit. And I also know that a lot of folks that I do run into have no experience with credit. It comes and it goes. It's been a burden to a lot of our folks by not knowing how to work that system. So that's my comment. There are many outside forces that affect us and impact us and are held against us negatively. However, at the same time, if we're going to be a part of this particular society, then we need to know how it works and how to maneuver within that situation. and to be fluid enough to adapt as these financial institutions change. Other than that, we need to develop our own entities, as we have done in the past. I'm only one generation away from sharecropping. My mother came to D.C. and then to New York City in the 1950s, and the basic idea was that for her generation to get away from the sharecropping, I think for them was tobacco, and get to a city where you can get a real job with some kind of benefits and begin to really participate in the larger society. And it worked for her. So that's my comment. We need to work on our own education, our own supplemental educational system, so that every home in the black community and in the Latin community is informed from a very young age on how to operate in this larger society.
We thank you, Carl, for your contribution to this subject today, and continue to support Mr. Page in history. We'll go to our next caller. Caller, line number 3330, caller 3330. Welcome to Missing Pages of History. Your comment or question for today's topic?
Yeah, I'd like to make a comment furthering what Brother McHale said, and this is Brother Jabari coming from Richmond, Virginia. In regards to what Brother McHale was saying, you also have to look at the fact that how economics is displayed in terms of the media. A lot of times you're seeing white faces or white people being spokesperson for different entities that they're trying to get people to spend their money on. And the problem with a lot of people in the black community is they have so much buying power, but they're buying into that which is contradictory to their interests, because they spend so much time, spend so much money making other people richer, that money that could be used to invest in our communities, to uplift our communities, to impact our education system is lost, because we have so much collective buying power, but we're not tapping into that resource, and we're using it in the means that stuff destructive to us because of what we're bombarded with constantly.
Okay, Carl. Point well made. Again, we'd like to thank you for listening to Mr. Page in History. And well, what I'm going to do before I go to my next caller, I will share with my listening audience, you know, some other numbers as we deal with this question of gap inequality. We're looking at the year 2013. When you look at the gap equality since the so-called Great Recession, what many people call them, between, I believe, the year 2007 to 2009, the most recent one, when we talk about net worth in terms of among the whites and the blacks, you have for 2013, they're looking at, for the whites, they had an average of $141,000 in net worth versus for blacks only $11,000. They said, numbers say something. So for those who are into public policies and trying to figure out how to be and develop our community, I think we have to look at those numbers. Number two, when you look at the median wealth ratio, you know, you have when it comes to white in 2013, there was a 12.9% greater in 2013. It's just real interesting in terms of this question of these gaps and how wide they are. For example, it talks about disability in a household wealth follows as a dramatic drop during the Great Recession. From 2007 to 2010, the median net worth of families was a decrease, the net worth of American families decreased by 39.4%. That means from $135,000 to $82,000. This rapidly plunging house price and stock market crash was the immediate contribution to the share lacking. So they were talking about this impact of stock. And one of the things they said earlier is that one of the things that white families have is they have more of a larger portfolio where they can invest in stock, which means they have greater means of receiving other forms of revenues where your average black don't. So that is, these numbers are real interesting. And they said something in terms of when one begin to develop policies in terms of how do we get out this number You know, we must understand the importance of number. So what I would do right now, we are going to have caller. We have caller 4298, I believe. Caller 4298. Welcome to Missing Pages of History. Your question or comments for today's program. Yes, caller 4298.
Good afternoon. Yes, good afternoon. This is Brother Robert Andrew Moses. I'm listening and learning, and it's, as always, it's a pleasure to hear the Missing Pages of History. My comments is, in terms of education, we have to know that where the planet's going, and the planet's going towards communism or scientific socialism as a worldwide system. And you know, the U.S. government is a prison house of nations. And you know, I was born in jail, and you know, so there's a program, there's a documentary out by Shola Lynch called Free Angela and All Political Prisoners, and this chronicles Angela Davis' life as a young, outspoken UCLA professor, and the producer is Sidra Smith. And anyway, you know, Angela Davis represents some of the contradictions in the society. You know, like I said, we were born in prison, and, you know, her trial, they thought they had her dead in the water because she had bought the guns that the shootout at the courthouse had done back in the day. I don't know if you're familiar with the Soledad brothers and Jonathan and George Jackson, but anyway, we have to understand where we are and who we are and what time it is. For instance, when I came out of high school in 1969, you know, there was a lot of consciousness already developed in the movement. I quote, by 1970, the Communist Party of the United States had 4 decades of experience with political defense cases at both the local and national levels and a vast array of global connections and practical skills. That's quote from page 203.
Can we ask you if we got, we're running out of time, we can give us about 30 seconds of summation, your point, and we would like to get these other few callers in. Go ahead, call.
Basically, you know, we just have to get political consciousness, seek first, like, the kingdom of heaven and this righteousness, and everything else will be added in terms of housing, food, clothing, and shelter. We got to keep put our eyes on the prize, and that's scientific socialism, and we need to educate ourselves. Our young people along those lines. Thank you.
And thank you, caller, for your contribution. Caller, if you can do it in 2 minutes or less, caller, caller 9289. Welcome to Missing Pages of History. Your question or comment on the subject matter for tonight.
Okay, I agree with what everyone was saying, and I just have one final analysis that will basically take care of everything that was said. You look at the protests in Ferguson, Missouri, which laid America's ongoing racial divide, and one reason is one source of that tension is the large financial gap between the black and white Americans, in which those figures are staggering when you look from 1962 to the present day. And also a typical black household accumulated less than one-tenth of the wealth of a typical white one. And sad thing about it is that it's getting worse. And the last gap is over the past 25 years, the wealth gap between blacks and whites has nearly tripled. And finally, the last thought, this in largest part because home ownership among blacks is so much lower. Housing is often America's greatest asset and a major component of their overall wealth. And that's all I have to say.
All right, Carl, we'd like to thank you. We'd like to thank our listening audience for allowing us to come to their home this evening and sharing with you another episode of Missing Pages of History. We're on the topic from 1955 to today. What has changed, taking a look at this inequality of this widening of this gap when it comes to various sectors in our economy, from wealth making to education to healthcare, et cetera. It's important for us to do the proper research so we can come with the proper analysis of our problems. Once we can do that, we will be on the road towards solving the problems to affecting our communities. Until next time, we'd like to thank you for listening to Missing Pages of History. And remind everybody that we have our first quarterly upcoming raffle drawing, which will take place on March 7th at 1 p.m. at WCLM 1450 Radio. We'd like to thank you for your support. Also, we'd like to continue to help support Missing Pages. You can send all contributions to Missing Pages of History, P.O. Box 27782, Richmond, Virginia 23261. Until next time, let's continue to try to go forward ever, backwards never, and use information that will help make us a better people and a better community. You have been listening to Missing Pages of History. We thank you.